Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program again today, broadcasting live from Chicago, Illinois. The folks here at the Moody Radio Network have just been marvelous, and it's good to be here on site at Moody. And Moody's like an entire universe here. I met with Moody Publishing, which published my books, He Is Not Silent and Words from the Fire. And right down the street, about a mile away, the historic Moody Memorial Church, which has been the setting for Founders Week for the Moody Bible Institute. And by the way, today was the 173rd birthday of D.L. Moody, the great evangelist who founded this school, the church, so much of this work, what was then called a Cole Portage Association, or a publishing organization. And I've been able to spend time with the students here, faculty, and its new president, Paul Nyquist, and others. And I'm just very thankful to have had the opportunity to be a part. I got to preach on Romans 1 and Romans 10 in Founders Week. Had a great time preaching in the great pulpit of the Moody Memorial Church. So many famous pastors are there, so much history there. But I tell you what encourages me the most is that it's still, right now, a very vibrant church in one of the world's great cities. Pastor Erwin Lutzer's been there for 30-plus years. That's just a great model of faithfulness. May his tribe increase. Folks, when you start thinking about what it means for us to look at raising children in the 21st century, just think about the cover story in New York Magazine, The Myth of the Gifted Child. Now, this one ought to have your attention. I want to tell you why. New York Magazine is one of those barometers of the culture because it goes right to Manhattan. This is Manhattan. This is cultural elite territory. This is not flyover country, as the coastal elites refer to the rest of America. This is the heart of Manhattan. This is where the rules are different. This is where, well, for instance, it makes sense that four-year-olds be given an intelligence test and that their future be more or less determined from that point onward by whether or not they get into the right preschool that gets them into the right school, that gets them into the right high school, that gets them into the right college. Otherwise, their lives are ruined. It's an amazing article, and it's entitled, again, The Myth of the Gifted Child, because what it points out is the lunacy of thinking that you can test a four-year-old and know, well, number one, exactly how intelligent they are, number two, what their aptitude might be for life. But the high pressure here is absolutely incredible. These Manhattanites think it makes a great deal of sense to test four-year-olds. And this is widespread in order to see what kind of program they get into, whether in public schools, private schools, prep schools, these most illustrious of preschools. Very interesting stuff in this study, by the way. The article is by Jennifer Senior. And, you know, I cite her often because she tends to write some of the most interesting stuff out there. And I'll tell you, this is extremely interesting because this really gets to the heart of a big issue for Christian parents. What do we hope for our children? That's the question I want to ask. What do we hope for? Is our hope, should we set as our hope for our children that they'll get in the right school in order to get into the right program, in order to get the right degree, in order to have the right life? You know, the problem with this, I think, is not that these parents are shooting too high for their kids. I think they're shooting very high. They want to get their kids in an Ivy League school because they think that will make them for life, get the right kind of spouse, the right kind of experience, the right kind of job, the right kind of life, the right kind of country house, the right kind of apartment in the city, the right kind of bank account, the right kind of club memberships, the right club kind of peers and friends to have, the right kind of respect from the larger culture. And then they reason back from the Ivy League institution to the high school that you need to attend in order to increase your chances to get there, to the school before high school, the primary school, which will give you a better chance of getting into the secondary school to get you into the college, which goes all the way back to the preschool and now to the nursery, to the lunacy of submitting four-year-olds to these tests in order to decide which four-year-olds are gifted. Now, just think about that. Those of you who are parents, have been parents, or for those of you on this program who ever were a four-year-old, let me ask you, do you think it's at all reasonable to expect that a child's future should be fixed by these kinds of decisions, these kinds of stakes, riding on the interpretation of a test at age four? Now, I think the answer to that is going to be no. I really don't expect too many people are going to call this program today. And by the way, get ready to call 877-893-8255, 877-893-3TALK. I don't think that many people are going to call and say, you know, I really want to follow the style of life for my child. What I aspire for them is perfectly reflected in this article. And what I really want is to go get my four-year-old tested in order to get him or her in the right preschool to get in the right school, to get in the right high school, to get in the right college, to get the right life. But I'll tell you what, I think there are a lot of non-Manhattanites, a lot of folks who do not live in New York. They're not a part of the Manhattan pressure cooker culture and the elitism there, who nonetheless, in their own way, are just as wrong. I think there are a lot of dads out there whose greatest hope is that their son play on some team. I think there are a lot of moms out there whose greatest hope is that their daughter would marry the right man and, in a Cinderella story, live happily ever after. I think there are even more parents out there who just want their children to be wealthy and financially comfortable. I think there are a lot of children out there whose parents just want for them, more than anything else, for them to be happy. I want to ask you, from a Christian perspective, what should you wish and hope for and pray for concerning your children? I'm a parent. My wife and I have hopes for our children, and I hope they're the right kind of hopes. Let's talk about it today. I think this could be a good conversation session with each other. How should we encourage each other to hope and pray for our children, to have ambitions for our children, to invest in and to direct our children, not only at age 4, but at 14, 24, and wherever they are under our parental care? The phone number, 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. You're going to be fascinated by some of the data in that article. We'll get to that in just a moment. You can go look for it yourself by going to New York Magazine, the cover story for this week, The Myth of the Gifted Child. Meanwhile, there are some other material out there, especially in magazines, that ought to have your attention this week. I'll tell you, the most chilling of them all is the cover story in the New York Times Magazine this week, which is entitled The Jihadist Next Door. And the picture on the front is of one of the most wanted jihadists in the world today. And it looks like a man who probably grew up in Afghanistan or in the Pashtun area or in the Hindu Kush or in Pakistan, but instead he grew up just outside Mobile, Alabama. His name was Omar Hamami. He grew up the son of a Syrian father and a very southern Alabamian mother. And what should be more chilling to us even than that, he attended a local Baptist church, went to Vacation Bible School, went to Sunday school, and at age 6 indicated that he wanted to be baptized. He was brought up as a Southern Baptist, went to Bible camp, sang away in the manger on Christmas Eve. But now, a decade after all that, Mr. Hamami, who is now a young man and one of the world's most wanted jihadists, is 8,500 miles away on the eastern edge of Africa. He has become a key figure, according to the New York Times Magazine, one of the world's most ruthless Islamist insurgencies in the guerrilla army known as the Shabab, threatening to overthrow the American-backed Somali government. He's changed his name. He is no longer Omar Hamami. He is now Abu Mansur al-Amriki, which is, in Arabic, the American. He gave an interview to an American journalist that produced the story in the New York Times Magazine, and it is simply chilling. The photographs may be even more chilling than the words in the article. You're looking at the all-American boy, as he is here in early photographs, and he attended high school there in the area of Mobile, Alabama. You look at the pictures of him growing up, and then you see the Islamicization of this young man. And we're going to be talking at some point about what really is going on here. He shifted to Islam. And one of the interesting things about this is that he shifted to Islam because when he visited Damascus and he visited his Islamic relatives, he liked what he found. In particular, he liked the way that women served men and were subservient to them. He liked the male camaraderie with his cousins and uncles. And eventually, he decided not only would he become a Muslim, but he began to follow the logic of Islamic radicalism and to see America itself as an appropriate target of terrorism. That's right. Even though he grew up in America, he graduated from American high school. As a matter of fact, he did attend an American high school, then the University of South Alabama. During that period, he was becoming highly Islamicized, and now he would do violence to the United States of America. His own father, Shafiq Hamami, is also profiled in the article. And, of course, he's been repudiated by his son, even though he is head of the mosque in Mobile, Alabama. Folks, this is just a reminder to us that there could be right next door to you a future jihadist. And the reality is that the New York Times Magazine does not have any theological equipment with which to deal with this question. How could this happen? And there are a lot of Christians who would be asked a question, how could this happen? And we need to be reminded of the fact that the Christian understanding of human sinfulness means that we have an almost infinite capacity to deceive ourselves. And we can, under the right circumstances, convince ourselves almost of anything. How do you explain? Just think about this. How do you explain how church-going, well-taught, well-reared Germans became workers in extermination camps killing the Jews. How is it that people who otherwise were good, upright citizens would turn and profit off of the grotesque slave trade? How is it that persons could be involved in grotesque medical experiments that cause tremendous human suffering, involve themselves in eugenics and racism and all the rest? How is it you can become a jihadist? It is because the danger lurks very near to the surface of the skin. Under the right circumstances, we'd be shocked to know what the neighbor next door would do. Under the right circumstances, but by the grace of God, we better be concerned about what we might do. We're going to come back to talk about what parents should hope and pray for concerning their children on the Albert Mueller Program. Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. Yesterday we had a fascinating discussion about the New York Times articles concerning boys trying to find masculinity in fragrance and grooming products. And churches trying to reach out to young men with these fight clubs. I published an article this morning entitled Masculinity in a Can, Fight Club at Church and the Crisis of Manhood. I think you might find that interesting. I've had some interesting feedback on it already today. I think you're going to want to talk about, however, the article that's the cover story in New York Magazine. I mentioned it at the opening of the program today because it's one of those articles that just kind of grabs you by the throat. As a parent, I guess I have to tell you the first shock to me was that it's routine now in a city like New York, especially in the area of Manhattan, for four-year-olds to be tested to see what kind of kindergarten they're going to be admitted to. Let me just read to you here. Jennifer Senior writes, in New York, it turns out that an awful lot is determined by a child's fifth birthday. Nearly every selective elementary school in the city, whether it's public or private, requires standardized exams for kindergarten admission, some giving them so much weight they won't even consider applicants who score below the top 3%. If a child scores below this threshold, it hardly spells doom, but if a child manages to vault over it and in turn gets into one of these selective schools, it can set him or her on a successful glide path for life. That's right, for life, because these things are being dictated at age four by the educational path this test then either opens or the door that it closes. Now, the interesting things here, you've got a lot of kickback on this all of a sudden. Jennifer Senior is writing this article because a good many observers of all this are saying it's insane. One wrote back to say, what would you think if you were walking down the street and you saw a parent yanking a one-year-old child up from the sidewalk yelling, walk, and expletive? The same, he says, is true of a system that insists a child perform well in a test at 4 years of age. Early good testers don't make better students, he tells me, any more than early walkers make better runners. The article goes through the kind of tests that children are taking, what kind of score seems to be necessary to get in certain schools. But Sally Shaywitz, author of Overcoming Dyslexia, writes that most researchers in the field of childhood development they're in agreement, as Jennifer Senior summarizes, that the minds of nursery school children are far too raw to be judged. All kinds of interesting things here. It turns out, by the way, that when you measure the IQs of young children, the results are variable. You know, you test them before a cookie or after a cookie on a good day or a bad day in the morning or the afternoon, and the test can be very variable. It does point out, nonetheless, that it could be informative. The IQ score could tell you something. Obviously, at either extreme, it might tell you something. But in terms of measuring the relative intelligence of four-year-olds, that's pretty tough. One of the men cited in this, one of the authors cited in this article says, no university I know would think of using a four-year-old's data to decide who to admit. That's really interesting. But what's happening is these Ivy League schools are using high school graduations, which are using middle school graduations, which are using elementary school graduations, which are using high school kindergarten admissions to decide who gets in and who stays out. These parents, by the way, are neurotic about this. They want to make sure the kid gets in the right nursery school, so they want to prep them. One of the scandals that is covered in this book are parents who are getting copies of the test, and they are teaching their four-year-olds how to take the test. They are drilling their four-year-olds on vocabulary, helping their four-year-olds to understand modes of reasoning so that they can pass this test. Meanwhile, the four-year-olds want to play and go to the bathroom. That's what, it turns out, the author of this particular piece sees as she watches this. Boys tend to under-test because they can't sit still for the full duration of the exam. Others can't stay awake or concentrate that long. I love the way Jennifer Senior writes this, choosing at some catastrophic point to crawl under their desks and give up. Really weird. You start looking at this, and there's more, by the way, because as it turns out, the most important predictors of whether children are actually going to do well in school or do well in certain tasks of life are not academic. They're not intelligence. They're what some people call emotional intelligence, the test you may have seen where a child is put in a room with a marshmallow, and they are told that they can eat the marshmallow. It's fully legitimate. It's theirs. They can eat it. But if they will withhold eating it for a certain amount of time, when the adult comes back, they'll be given not one but two marshmallows. And it's a test of emotional maturity, the ability to postpone gratification. It turns out that children who do that really do indicate a propensity to do far better in college and elsewhere, in something like the SAT test. Perhaps even 200 points, one researcher suggests, are likely to be found when you track those students from their four-year-old decision to forego for some time eating a marshmallow to when they are 18 or 17 taking the Scholastic Aptitude Test. You know, you look at all this, and I'm not so concerned about preschools, and I'm not so concerned about who goes to an Ivy League institution. I'm concerned with parents who think that's what parenting is all about, and that's their hope for their child. I want to know, what should Christian parents think about as we think about what to hope for our children? The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. What do you hope for your children? What do you pray for? What's your ambition for them? What should it be? Let's go to Anissa, listening on WFIA in Louisville, Kentucky. Go ahead, Anissa.
Yeah, my 5-year-old's in kindergarten, and biblically speaking, I mean, is it unrealistic for me to teach her to try to control her emotions so that we can, for instance, get through a Sunday school lesson or any kind of things that we're teaching her?
Yeah, you know, number one, you put that in a very interesting way, Anissa, and I want to replay what you said as best I can, because you kind of reveal the answer to the question and what you said. Should I be expecting her to try to control her emotions? The try part means, oh, absolutely. Yes, you should absolutely be teaching a 5-year-old how to learn to control her emotions. I don't think we should expect that a 5-year-old is going to have full emotional control. I think that would be irresponsible, especially if a child tends to be on the more emotional, end of the spectrum. On the other hand, that child should understand that you are modeling how to hold your emotions in check, how not to be driven by your emotions, and that child should understand clear expectations such that there's a price to be paid for when emotions get out of control, and there's the reward for when emotions are held in check. That's basically good training for adulthood. That's what parents do, as parents show the consequences between good behavior, bad behavior, good control, loss of control. And, 5-year-olds are just, at the end of the day, they're 5-year-olds. In the same way, as the author of this article says, it would be unrealistic to be mad at a 1-year-old because he can't walk or doesn't walk or is punished for not walking. It would be wrong to punish a 4-year-old for not being able to concentrate through an entire intelligence test, which is probably a very unrealistic expectation. I think it'd be unrealistic to expect that a 5-year-old would be a complete master of his little emotions. On the other hand, he ought to be learning how to bring them under control, ought to be moving in the right direction, ought to be receiving the right kind of modeling and teaching and encouragement and discipline, and ought to be learning that letting loose with emotions is a really horrible way to get through life. The penalties for that go far beyond what mom and dad will bring now in life. The failure to have emotional control and emotional responsibility and emotional accountability, it's devastating. The phone number to join the conversation is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. We're talking about what we should aspire for our children. I love when this is called, because one of the things we should aspire for our children, far more than their score on an IQ test, is their moral character, the responsibility and the true maturity of their personality. And that's more important in life, more important for godliness, more important, I think, for eternity by far than mere intelligence. The phone number is 877-893-8255. These parents are concerned their kid won't get in the right preschool and their life will be ruined, or they think if they do get in the right preschool, their life will be made. How do you give an answer to that? 877-893-TALK. You're listening to the Albert Mueller Program.
Listening to the Albert Mueller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmueller.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mueller.
Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. This cover story really is interesting. It's another one of those barometers of America. We do this to ourselves. No outside force really imposed this on us. No invader brought in this mentality. This is what we did to ourselves. We're in a meritocracy society. And at least for most Americans, the mentality is, if I just get my children ready to do well in the competitive environment in which they're going to live, they can earn their way, they can study their way, they can make their own way and be a success. And so most parents want their children to have the kinds of things they're going to need in order to get there. Now, in different sectors of our culture, the stakes just seem to be higher. And for instance, in the pressure cooker of Manhattan, parents don't want to admit that their goal is not, or that their expectation is not, that the child will go to one of the Ivy League institutions. And the assumption is that they do. They've got it made. It's all set. They're going to be a success. And so writ large across this country, we've got this problem. But in different areas, it comes out in different ways. I do not want you to look at this cover story, New York Magazine, and say what pathetic creatures these New Yorkers are. These neurotic Manhattanites, members of the cultural elite, who have such warped hopes for their children. Well, I kind of do hope you'll see the hopes as warped. But I hope you'll understand it's not just their problem. It's the problem for every parent who has the wrong kind of expectation or hope or aspiration for his or her children. That's the problem. And if we're not careful, Christian parents are going to end up playing the same game and riding the same merry-go-round with the same unrealistic and ungodly hopes for our children. The phone number is 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. What do you hope for your children? What should Christian parents hope for concerning our children? Folks, some interesting things that I just want to share with you about this that perhaps in another context you might not understand so clearly. This context allows me to say some things that as a college and seminary president I can say. I'm thankful that when most of the parents drop off kids, especially for undergraduate school, they generally have a pretty good set of expectations for them. I really believe that. But they've had to think through some things, and by the time they get to us, one of the things that they have to think through is whether or not they're really settled with the fact that that they can be happy their child, son or daughter, is headed into some form of Christian service. Let me tell you, I had a college chaplain tell me just a few years ago that the greatest frustration of his life was when conversations like I'm about to describe to you happen. Now, let me tell you one of the conversations he told me about. He had a young couple. There was a young man and a young woman. They were planning to get married. As a part of planning to get married, they had decided that that they were sharing a common calling to missions. Their plan was graduate, get married, head to the mission field. This chaplain finds himself in the president's office of his college, a Christian college, talking to parents who said, "We did not pay $80,000 of tuition for her to waste her life on the mission field." Now, folks, that tells you a great deal about what can go wrong. And there you have parents who see it as a bad investment when a child, quote, wastes an education by going to serve the cause of Christ in the mission field. And I just have to believe that that disappointment wasn't rooted in a decision that parent made right then. I think when the parent heard the child say, my new husband and I are going off to be missionaries to follow the call of Christ, that just wasn't, it turns out, in the parent's plan. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. I'd love for you to join the conversation. Tell me what you're thinking. Write me by email at mail@albertmueller.com. And we're always glad to hear from you by social media. That's twitter.com/Albert Mueller or Mueller Radio. And at Facebook, the Albert Mueller Program. The phone number, 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. You know, you read this, even the pictures, quite frankly, are very well chosen artistically. The front cover is of a rather studious-looking little four-year-old girl with a quizzical look on her face as well as eyeglasses, more or less saying, what am I doing in this picture? like, what am I doing in life? The story begins, by the way, with a little girl who is being prepped for a test. One of these four-year-old intelligence tests. She's working at the answers. She's asked, what is a house? She says, a house. I have to go to the bathroom. Yeah, so four-year-olds do. That's who four-year-olds are. Four-year-olds are not to be prepped in order to take intelligence tests, in order to get in the right preschool, to get in the right school, to get in the right college. This is nuts. When we come back, we're going to get to your calls. Calls at 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Coast to coast and with listeners around the world. You're listening live from Chicago, Illinois, to the Albert Mueller Program. We're going right to the phones. First, Baltimore, Maryland. Chris is listening on WBAL. Go ahead, Chris.
Yes, how are you doing, Dr. Miller? I believe that we should be praying for our kids' daily affairs and with them on their salvation with Christ.
I can't think of anything more important for a parent to have as a concern, because our parenting is not just about this temporal life. It's about eternity. And so, Chris, when you start praying for your children's salvation and you're tracking with them on their daily basis, day by day, just in faithful parenting, where they are and where you want them to be in terms of character, following their conversion. I can't think of anything more important than character and convictions. And, the assumption of these Manhattanites, and I'm not going to say all of them, but those that are profiled in this story, is that their kids will have everything taken care of, if they just get in the right school, all other things will fall into place. And I think that's where we as Christians have to say, look, the most important things for us are the souls of our children and their spiritual health, their knowledge of the gospel, and their knowledge of the things of God, their character and the convictions they hold. And we honestly are going to have to believe that under the providence of God, that's what's going to lead them where they need to be. And it's likely to be a very different place than those whose priorities are established by an aspirational meritocracy, where we're just trying to get our kids in the right school to have the right life. Thanks for your call, Chris. Let's go to Misty, listening on WFIA from Shepherdsville, Kentucky. Go ahead, Misty.
Hi, Dr. Mueller. I just want to say, you know, just like he said, just praying that the Lord would extend salvation to my children, and that anything they are called by him to do, they would bring glory to him.
Okay, Misty, I want to ask you a question, and I'm going to put you on the spot here. Let's say, first of all, do you have children right now?
Yes, I have two, a boy and a girl.
Okay, well, bless your heart. Let's say that either one of them comes to you and says, Mom and Dad, I really feel called to missions. And as I understand that call in my life, that means that that I need to go to a place far, far away, thousands and thousands of miles away, and with spouse and children to live that far away. Let me just ask you, can you anticipate right now seeing that as something you should celebrate because of the call of God, or do you see that as something that would cause you trauma?
I would celebrate.
Yeah.
My husband and I now are in, my husband's a pastor, actually attending Boyce College, and that would bring me so much joy to know that they would be bringing glory to the Lord and spreading the gospel wherever they go.
You know, I really appreciate that answer, Misty, and I know you mean it. I think that's something that we as Christian parents better say to ourselves over and over again during the time we're raising our children. We better remind ourselves over and over again that we really do believe that in order to prepare our hearts for what God will do with our children. I guess you could say that I'm speaking to myself about that right now as a father, because I'm afraid that, I mean, just given the propensity of things, given how we love our children, given how we would want them close to us, we would desire, just in terms of a normal human desire, to have them, safe and by us rather than at risk and away from us. We better remind ourselves the call of the gospel means we've got to give ourselves to those things that lead to God's greatest joy, God's greatest glory. and to the extension of the gospel, and to find our joy in those. We don't follow our joy. Our joy better follow the right things. I appreciate the call, Misty. Let's go to Eric calling from Hollidaysburg, Pennsylvania. Go ahead, Eric.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing great. Glad to hear from you. What are you thinking?
Hey, yeah, it's funny. I was just going through the channels here. This is the first time I've ever heard of the show, and my heart was so burdened when you told me the story about these parents who said they didn't waste $80,000 on their child's education for them to go to the mission field, and my heart just sank. I'm 25 years old. I'm not that old. I don't have kids, but I felt that I should just call, maybe to encourage a young person that's out there or a parent. The verse that changed my life was Matthew 6:33. Seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things will be added unto you. I was chasing worldly dreams. I was going to college to pursue engineering, and I came home one night, 8 o'clock at night, and my family was crying. I didn't know what in the world happened. I thought my dog died or something. And come to find out, I was getting deployed to Iraq. I got to Iraq. Long story short, I come back, got down on my knees, and I said, God, if you make it clear, I'll follow you every step of the way, no matter what. It was the greatest decision I've ever made in my life. And I'm telling you, you delight yourself in the Lord, and he'll give you the desires of your heart. And you put him first place. This earth is so temporal. If we get our eyes set on eternal things and lay up our treasures in heaven, our heart will be there. And we just got to keep our focus on what's real. And this world is not real. We're just passing through, pilgrims passing through. And I tell you what, whoever's listening out there, you keep your eyes on Jesus. It'll be the best decision you ever made.
Thank you so much for your call. Let me tell you, I'm glad you called for a reason that you may not know. You said you wanted to give hope to some young person out there who might need to hear what you had to say. And I share that hope. But I got to tell you, I've got my own hope, Eric. I hope there are parents out there who are saying right now, what I want to do is pray for my children and raise my children so that when they're 25, they sound like Eric. With that kind of passion, that kind of dedication, I mean, frankly, the whole catalog of your service to your country and in going to Iraq and your service to Christ as you now have come back. And you know, it's interesting you use that word deployed. It's really interesting because that's a word that happens to you. That's a word of subjective application by someone else. It's done to you. You don't deploy yourself, you get deployed. And I think one of the major issues of misunderstanding in contemporary Christianity is we think that we deploy ourselves. You know, Eric, you were deployed to Iraq, and you got your orders, and you went. God bless you. Glad you were safely back. We ought to understand our Christian discipleship in the same terms. If we do seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, then that's going to mean we're going to be deployed in all kinds of places we may not see. It means our children are going to be deployed for the sake of the gospel, the sake of the kingdom of Christ in ways we might not anticipate, but we ought to find our glory in that deployment. And, of course, that means we must find our joy in the fact that they are a part of that kingdom as they come to it by faith. Oh, Eric, thanks so much for that call. You know, this is just another reminder of the power of radio and the conversation you have like this. And thanks for finding the program, Eric. I hope you'll come back and find it regularly. I'd love to have you as a regular listener to this program. This is the place for intelligent Christian conversation where we try to think about the things that matter and do our very best to think as Christians. A catalyst for this kind of conversation is exactly what we saw in the cover story of this New York magazine. And again, it would be very easy to look at this and say, those sick and warped and confused New York parents look at their hopes for their children. But I wonder how many parents who think their aspirations are healthier and more sane and more reasonable are actually expectations that come even close to those of the gospel. It's a very different list, isn't it? We appreciate the callers who called. We'll be back with final thoughts in just a moment. Coast to coast and with listeners around the world, you're listening to the Albert Mueller Program. Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. Fascinating discussion. I hope you'll continue to think about these things. That cover story in New York Magazine is one of those things you see, and it just really prompts you to think. There's something wrong here. And in terms of Christian thinking, Christian analysis, that's where a lot of this really needs to begin. We need to look at something and say that's wrong, and then figure out why is it wrong. What's wrong with this picture? And then rethink according to Christian truth so that we bring all things under submission to the Lordship of Christ. That's the only way it's going to happen. It doesn't happen just by hoping it will happen. You have to think. And one of the liabilities of so much contemporary Christianity is that there's so little thinking going on. Folks, we'll continue the conversation in weeks ahead. We've been talking about the impact of social media, how Christians should think about that as well. The Economist, which is, for Great Britain, kind of the combination of Time magazine and the Wall Street Journal, is out with its regular survey of technology, is dealing with social media. And it reports that, for instance, just to take the one site of Facebook, there are now 55 million updates a day. And there are more than 3.5 billion pieces of content shared with each other on Facebook every week. Today, some 70% of its audience is right up front and sharing itself now online, whereas at the beginning, a lot of people were private. It turns out it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to be private. Now, other interesting things that come out of this are that there's a generational distinction here. It turns out that the younger you go, the more likely you are to text rather than to tweet. If you're following the lingo, that means the more likely you are to use a cell phone, less likely you are to be on Twitter. But as soon as kids get, and young people get things like an iPhone that allows them to tweet more easily, it turns out they turn there too. Twitter is one of the fastest growing platforms in terms of social media. And I think the explanation for that is pretty clear. You can communicate in very concise formats exactly what you need to say right now to people. A lot of it's nonsense, of course. A lot of social communication by social media is nonsense. But for that matter, as soon as the telephone was invented, it was a way of conveying a great deal of nonsense over wires. The reality is that God made us social creatures. We're the people as Christians who need to look at this massive explosion of social media and say, this isn't just about technology. This isn't just about some kind of cultural phenomenon. This is about, by common grace, the fact that we are made in God's image being made clear to us and that we were made to relate. We were made to be social. You know, the world thinks, in its secular understanding and perspective, that means that we're just the people that relate to each other. For Christians, it needs to be a reminder to us that we were made first and foremost to know and to love, to serve, and to be related to the holy and righteous Creator who made us. And we know that happens and only happens through the gospel of the Lord Jesus Christ. That redefines social media. Back next week for Intelligent Christian Conversation. Thanks for listening to the Albert Mohler Program.
Thanks for listening. And be sure to visit our website, www.albertmohler.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmohler.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.